Good afternoon. The time is 1:40. For the record, Representative Moses, Representative Jewell, Representative Wyrock, Representative Hawker, Representative Stoltz, Co-Chair Meyer, Co-Chair Chenault are here. Before we get started, I'd like to bring up House Bill 66 and House Bill 67 up under bills previously heard and scheduled. We're not planning on taking any testimony or any action on these bills until sometime after energy break. I just want to let the public know and give the members an update on what's going on with us. Currently, we have subcommittees that are closing out, and as soon as we get all those set up, I'm going to bring it before the full committee.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question.
Representative Wyrock?
How many subcommittees are left to close? Do you know?
There are five.
Any of those are mine?
Are any of those mine?
No.
No.
I was looking for Holt.
Hey, leave our friend Holt. With that, we will start on House Bill 134, where we left off yesterday. We left off on item 94, but before we bring law up, I'd like to bring labor up. They've got two issues, so it shouldn't take very long, and we'll let them go on their merry way.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Stoltz.
February 7th version this time?
February 7th version, yes, sir, Representative Stoltz.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Guy Bell, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Labor and Workforce Development. The two sections relating to labor and workforce development are related. It allows the same actions for our management services section and for our vocational rehabilitation administration section. We use a federally approved rate method to cover the cost of our operation. Under that federal method, we have the ability to carry revenue from one year to the next. It's not always exact in our revenue and expenditures. Legislative audit reviewed our method and has recommended that the legislature approve revenue carry forward. So what this would do is give us the authority to carry revenue from one year to the next under our federally approved method. And it's not expenditure authority, it's revenue authority only. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Doesn't appear to be, Guy. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With that, we will bring law up and online. With us, we also have Craig Tillery. I believe he'll speak to Section C and D, but I would figure that the AG might have something to say for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Nordstrand. I'm the Acting Attorney General. With me is Catherine Jotty, the Administrative Director of the Department of Law. Item 94 is the annual judgments and claims summary. This year it's $1,108,876, and I'm available for any questions you might have about these claims. They are primarily public interest litigant fees paid in various cases, as well as personal injury cases paid, and to a large degree, Marine Highway claims, Jones Act, and Admiralty claims.
Any questions? Please, Scott.
Okay. The next item is $19,100 to complete funding. This is item 97, complete funding in the Parental Consent Act case. The committee's very familiar, I think, of this. This is essentially just enough money to do the oral argument and prepare for the oral argument in the Supreme Court, and hopefully that will conclude this case.
Representative Stoltz.
Good question. Last year we had a statutory claim on statutory change, I think, on maritime claims, and how does that affect us? Is this bigger, smaller, not affected?
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, we are now sort of cleaning up the last of the cases that predate the effective date of that change. As you accurately recall, in I believe 2002, or I'm sorry, 2003. we passed, the legislature passed legislation and the governor signed into law legislation that essentially put the marine highway workers under Alaska Workers' Compensation Act. These are the cases that occurred prior to the effective date, which I think it didn't have an immediate. When was the effective date? Oh, July 1, 2003. So these are all cases where injuries had happened before that. We should see less and less and less of these, and eventually none. Although I will say that the statute itself, the constitutionality, is being challenged, whether or not we could, in essence, force the marine highway workers under the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act as opposed to their traditional maritime remedies. We're confident we will prevail there, but that is an issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hawker.
No questions, sir.
You had no questions?
You have no questions, sir.
He's happy.
I guess
you could bring social services back.
Why did we go outside for testing?
In the Parks and the Planned Parenthood case, it predates me, but I think the legislature hired its own counsel, as I recall, to pursue this case. And after the change of administrations, we sort of took over management of the case. And this, the attorney who's been doing this, it's a huge case. It's gone on for many years, and there would be, it would make no sense to discontinue using him on this case.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, we also did have staff of our own working on this as well. So it was a dual effort between the Department of Law and its hired counsel.
Okay. All right, Madam B.
B is statehood defense.
Mr. Chairman, item 11B simply extends the lapse date for an appropriation we received several years ago. We're in the process now of adding staff to work on RS 2477 cases, and we would like the money to be available next year to continue to pay for the staff person we're adding, a new attorney in the State of Defense Natural Resources area.
Okay. And this Craig online.
Mr. Chairman, items 11C and D, this is an area that the legislature funded for us last year. We went through in some detail the projects that it would fund, and again, this is just an extended lapse date for those same monies.
Okay, I just had that he was online.
Sure.
To speak there on specifically 11C and D. So he has nothing to say, and there's no questions. We'll move on.
Mr. Chairman, that's fine. I have nothing to add.
Say again, Craig.
I have nothing to add, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Kramer. I'm the Director of Admin Services for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Before you, we have Section 12A. It's a $2.8 million federal fund request. This transfers the Alaska Aviation Safety Program project. It's a NASA grant from our department's operating budget over to our capital budget. It's going to cross over in multiple fiscal years, and so it's more appropriately in the capital budget than it is in the operating budget.
Okay.
12B, $48,500 of GF. This was a capital project that cleaned up a site on Tudor Road for a maintenance shop. That work has been done. This balance, this $48,500, is left over from that project, and we'd like to have it reapproved over to our Alaska Statewide Emergency Communications Program.
Okay.
Item 12C is for $57,200 in general funds. This request is for increased basic telephone service costs provided by the Army National Guard for fiscal year 2005 that we're currently in. This is the annual basic telephone service costs, which will be billed to state program offices operating within the Army National Guard Armory on Fort Richardson, and our federal agreements that we enter into with the military won't allow this to be charged to them. It's a service to us. Item 12B is for $30,900 general fund dollars. This is request is for the cost of the state network service that is not provided and not available through State of Alaska DOA ETS to the Air National Guard facilities maintenance components, both at Kulis and Eielson Air Force Base. And our final project, 12E, is for $52,600 general fund. This request is for the cost of the state network service that is not provided or available from DOA ETS to our Military Youth Academy on Fort Richardson.
No questions?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you,
thank you.
One of my favorites.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Nico. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nico Voss. I'm the Acting Director of Support Services, Department of Natural Resources. There's two items in the supplemental relating to the fire suppression activity. Line 13A is $36,902.7 in general funds for the activity starting from July on, and line 19B on line 152 is $2,010,200 for the last couple of days of June. That's a ratification. Obviously, we have had a tremendous fire season, and as the comptroller for the Department of Natural Resources, I'm trying to be frugal and save every penny, then the fire gets going and we spend this kind of money. It's absolutely significant. It's almost three times the average fire season in terms of general fund expenditures, and people in the interior know what it all was all about last year. It was a very extended season, very unusual weather conditions, and we had a tremendous amount of effort going into the suppression of the wildland fire. Dean Brown, the Deputy Director of Division 4C in charge of fire, is available to respond to specific questions members may have about the fire conditions and the specifics, and so with that, I'll open it up to questions.
Anybody have any questions, Representative Kelly?
Just a general comment. Once something like that hits, whether it's C-130s flying all around Cactover or something like the fires or whatever, once the purse is opened up on something like that, have we looked back on the season to find out how efficiently, as far as cost, that was prosecuted, the whole effort? Because once, I mean, it's easy to say, yeah, we all know about fires, but I can't tell you whether that ought to be $37 million or whether it ought to be $14 million. And once you open, it's just like an outage with a utility. Once the guys hit double time, it's a different world, and everybody's a hero. But
right.
The cash drawer's wide smack open. How do you judge how well we did here compared to what we might have done?
Through Chair, Representative Kelly, I think what I like Gene to do is to kind of explain how we monitor and manage the fires on a day-to-day thing. There's an incident command center. They evaluate the resources allocated on a daily basis, so there's daily cost estimates. People review whether or not additional resources are needed, whether or not we need more aviation equipment, that type of thing. And then after the season is over, then we get together with our federal cooperators and with the local districts, and we review the activities, see what happened, what went well, what didn't go well. And the North Slope, Fairbanks North Slope Borough has a committee right now we're working with to see, what we learned in relation to that. And Dean, being the operation manager, probably can expand on that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dean Brown. I'm the Deputy Director of Forestry, DNR. Nico covered it very well. I'd also like to add that from the time a fire escapes initial attack, a wildland fire situational analysis is done, and then it is done frequently, sometimes more than once a day. And in that document, we look at costs, we look at what the strategies for fire suppression are, and identify costs to go with those, discuss them with the land managers, and we monitor that very closely on a daily basis. We also keep for every fire during the entire fire season what we call a night report that gives us the estimates, and bearing in mind that they are estimates because things such as warehouse issues out and repairs and things like that lag behind the immediate suppression efforts. We do that nightly. So we do estimates and keep those costs going. So they're monitored very closely. Those are discussed with the teams, with the incident commander, with the area and regional foresters.
Okay. What was the most inefficient thing we did when you looked at it over and looked at how we did? What was the worst way it went? What do you wish had been a whole lot better?
Through the chair, what I wish had been better would have been the weather system. I mean, this was an unprecedented situation of natural forces that we really have not seen before, and we hope we don't see again soon. As far as operational activities and response, we've been through a fall fire review. We also have worked interagency looking at how well the incident command system worked, the transitions, and I guess at this point, I don't see a worst case or lessons learned thing that stands out. I do think that we had a lot of very good successes. I think that, in particular, this is the first time we've had joint command in the northern region involving the boroughs, the municipalities, local structure fire departments. There was just a tremendous amount of working together and learning how to work within the established system of incident command. So, there's always things you can do better. We look closely at that, and I think as an organization, we are extremely self-critical of ourselves, saying what we should be doing better and can do better. And we've, in fact, done some of that this winter, looked at tightening up some of our logistics system, which was brand new last year for a statewide system in response to, the budget pre-suppression versus suppression. And it worked surprisingly well, but we've got some things in place to have it work better this year.
Thank you.
Representative Holm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My comments would be, what are you going to do about the better communication that really is necessary for the folks in the areas that are affected? It appeared to me that the last time it was very problematic.
To Chair Representative Holm, we've had a number of discussions this winter about that. One of the things that happened because, the fire situation grew fairly rapidly was that we rely strongly on public information officers, fire information officers, and we have training going on this spring. And one of the areas identified for additional people that need training in that area so we can have them available, and I'm talking about local Alaskans working in the fire system, is to have those available. And then additionally, we're looking at moving what was then the JIC, which is the Joint Information Command, which was not only for the fire agencies, but also included the boroughs and municipalities. And we're looking at moving that from Fort Wainwright to town for better access, because one of the main things was that access to the public, even though we set up a number of phone lines, had those manned, that situation was changing hourly. And I've got to say that the media was wonderful in working with us on making sure people had the latest information on these things. So we intend to make an effort actually to notify landowners of the current status and situation of where fires are directly. And that will take more people directly in an area. So we look closely at that. We can do better on that, and we've got some plans to do that.
Well, I appreciate that. I just realized that during that process, it seemed like there needed to be a single voice speaking so that everyone had an opportunity to access information as quickly as possible without a lot of gray noise. The other thing I would I wonder about is what is the connection with the cost and the support we got from the Force One or whatever they call the folks that come from BLM to come manage the fire. How does that relate to our state cost?
Representative Holmes, who's the chair, I think you're referring to the National Type 1 team.
There you go. That's there. It.
And the way that's done is essentially we have interagency agreements with BLM, with U.S. Forest Service, which are the major suppression agencies, and we keep track and cross-bill each other each year for costs. So essentially a Type 1 team, and Alaska does have its own Type 1 team, national team. However, at the time of the fires, our forces were already fully committed to the number of fires, which was to our advantage, actually, because we had local firefighters of a national quality working on many of our local fires in the interior. So the costs are actually a function of the fire complexity, not the team. So in other words, if the land ownership is a certain percentage state, certain percentage federal, then that cost is prorated. The team actually works with the land manager for the type of suppression and the methodology that it will take to fight the fires.
Well, thank you for that. I just would like to point out to you that when that team first came, I was on the scene when that team first came to Alaska, and they spent a good period of time, maybe 12 hours or even longer, I forget what the number was that I was told, but they spent that much time looking at maps and figuring out what Alaska looked like, and they didn't have any idea what the animals were, and they had no idea what the vegetation was, and so they didn't know a black spruce from a cedar tree. And I just thought it was kind of peculiar that that we would bring those people up here. I don't know that fire suppression is any different in California than it is in Alaska. I suspect it probably is. But it just seemed a little strange to me.
Representative Holmes, through the chair, that's an excellent observation, but I wanted to tell you that, and you're correct, the fire situation and fuels are different in Alaska. We do attach a local liaison, generally a higher-level fire management person from the Division of Forestry with each Type 1 team. We give them an in-briefing to ensure that they, number one, know who to ask questions of, and we familiarize them. Last summer, we did have 21 incident management team mobilizations. Three of those were national Type 1 teams, and normally our own Alaska team, which you know is the most familiar, would have been the first team on scene. But in fact, because the fire situation grew rapidly, individuals from that team had already been put in charge of several of the additional fires by the time we had to call up a Type 1 team. So we're very aware that when these people come up, we want to make sure they do know local conditions, or we have somebody as a shadow to make sure that we've got them well informed. So good observation, sir.
Thanks for your comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Cross.
I appreciate Representative Kelly bringing it up, because it's been a... And there's sort of two issues. It's a weird funding situation for us, because it's in a normal situation where we give a budget and they either live within it or not, or tell us why. We're trying to estimate on facts what it will take. This is always done in a ratification mode. And, I mean, it has to be, because you don't know how big the fires are going to be. But it's still an odd way, an odd system for us to have some budgetary control over. And it seems like there are two issues. Are you doing a good job fighting the fires? And it seems like you are, but I'm not an expert on that. And then are you doing it in a cost-effective manner? And that is really much harder to assess. You can there are feedback loops from the Fairbanks North Shore Borough team, advisory team, and all that to say whether you did a good job. But what systems are there to give us some confidence that there's an oversight? Because that you're spending the money right. Because it seems like the way this is funded, there would be every incentive. If you don't do a good job, you're going to get corrected somehow. But there's not much correction for overspending. So there would be this systemic tendency, it seems to me, to just spend as much as possible, because you know you're going to get criticized if you don't put out the fire right, but there's not much of a mechanism to criticize you for overspending. Can you just tell me some of the maybe systemic ways you guys control that aspect?
Thank you, Mr.
Nico?
Let me take a shot at it and then jump in. First of all, let me kind of, for those members that are not quite familiar with it, the legislature changed the funding for the Division of Forestry Fire Activity to an amount that is roughly the average of the last 10 years with the high and lows thrown out. In fiscal year 04, we almost made that, and just the last couple of days that changed. The procedure we then follow is whenever the situation is such that we run out of that money, we have to declare an emergency disaster declaration, and we notify the two presiding officers of the House and the Senate of the most current situation and what our best estimate is of the new cost. We did that 4 or 5 times last summer. We started out with the original appropriation of $6.7 million. We had a governor's disaster declaration on July 20th, one on August 5th, one on August 18th, and then another one on September 16th. Each time, we as administrative folks have the following criteria to follow. Clearly, we don't want to invent efficiency procedures as the fire goes. So all the firefighters have to follow the fire management handbook that is really a document that is a living document that is updated each year. After each fire season, the fire crews meet and then they review what went well, what didn't go well, and then they update the procedure. That's a negotiated document between all cooperators. The actual cost then is clearly under review and audited. One of the things is the landowner has to pay for the deposit. So in this case, if we fight a fire on federal land, the federal auditors come in and they check and see that we didn't frivolously spend the money. The other way around, if we have a Type 1 coming from the lower 48 and they fight our fire, we have to reimburse the lower 48, the federal government, whatever, for the activity. And so we audit them very clearly because it's our money. And so we are really very conscious of the question that the Representative Croft just asked. So another couple of things that we do to make sure that we get the best bang for our buck is that we, at the beginning of the season, we negotiate long-term aviation contracts so that we don't pay crisis kind of rates. We have a long-term rate with the most expensive assets, which are the aviation, and those assets are in place. Then the rate that those operators charge are negotiated well in advance. So the other thing that happened then, obviously, the resources that are needed in terms of equipment and staff, those are also rates that are negotiated in advance, for at least for the labor. And then the things that are not negotiated, but they're set criteria for, is equipment rental. We viewed it very diligently to make sure that we're not being overcharged. There's a lot of disputes. People have claims, and after a big fire season like this, my office and my procurement people get really busy with claims because we throw out requests for reimbursement because it's not according to the rate and this type of thing. So that's kind of a quick response from an administrative point of view, and then Dean can respond on the program side.
Representative Cross to chair. Nico covered that very thoroughly. I might simply add that since the cross-billing between agencies, between the state and the federal government, occurs at such detail, when we have a record-setting year like we had this year, it makes that process of checking the billing, the land status, and cross-billing extensive. But in addition to that level, you know, this year we did have 3 FEMA-declared fires, which in all of the history of the state, we've only had 2 in other years. So So we had three in 1 year, but for the last 40 years, we've only had two additional ones ever. And that level of scrutiny for federal auditing is very, very thorough. So that has given us, for the large fires, the fire complexes, such as the Boundary Fire, the Central Complex, that has given us the additional assurance of a really thorough look at that. The checks and balances are extensive. They pay off. Many times, the state ends up saving considerable money because we actually involve our fire managers in looking back at resource orders, at equipment used, at charges, and get good benefit from that use. So, but Nico did a very good job of covering it. Thank you.
Any other questions? Nico?
Move on to the next project because it's a little less money.
I hope so.
Section 13B is a request for reappropriation of $25,000 from the named recipient, the Ketchikan Area State Parks Advisory Board, to the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. Last year, the legislature appropriated this money as a designated grant to this advisory board. They do not have a way to receive or spend it, so they ask that our state park organization be appropriated this money, and it's for the Sepa Cove campground and some other facilities in that area to basically get it started and do some deferred maintenance.
Why would that be a supplemental?
It's a reappropriation, so it's a reappropriation, and we'd like to do it before the summer season starts. So we can get this work done before. It's a relatively minor. The next item is on Euroline 108, section 13C. It's a request to reappropriate or to redesignate the receipt supported service that was appropriated for a water program to general funds. Last year, at the very end of the legislative session, the legislature reappropriated $300,000 of general funds to receipt supported services. Basically, the limit in our water program for collecting receipt supported service is defined in statute as the direct cost. The direct cost allows us to only collect the fees that are directly associated with the activity, and so we could not collect the $300,000. What we had to do in order to live within the appropriation, we did not feel a couple of our positions. As a result, the number of water cases, adjudications, is being backlogged. We are only processing about half the number of applications that are coming in. Because we already have realized some savings because of the vacancies, and we ask that the $100,000 be changed from receipt supported service back to general funds, and then in fiscal year 06, we ask for the full $300,000.
Representative Croft.
What's the receipt? What are you receiving? These are
there's fees set in regulations for the various activities, water right applications. And so if you would apply for a water right, we ask you, based on the volumes of water that you use, a $50 fee or a $100 fee, that type of thing. And so the adjudicator that process that collects these fees, but it's not covering all the budget in it now.
Okay.
No other questions?
No questions. And I have covered section 19B, the ratification of the last fire suppression. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Susan Hartman.
For the record, my name is Susan Taylor. I'm the Admin Services Director for the Department of Revenue. And the first item we have is item 15A. Alaska State Pension Investment Board is asking for $1.1 million for increased manager's fees. Manager's fees are a percentage of investments under market. They are budgeted in a separate component and can only be used for those purposes. We do have a supplemental request in FY 2005 and an increment in FY 2006.
Any questions? Representative Kelly.
What do we get for the money?
I have the Comptroller of the Treasury Division here to answer those programmatic questions.
The asset, simplistically, I guess the asset. I'm sorry. My first time this year. My name is Betty Martin, Comptroller with the Treasury Division. Sorry. The asset classes that the fees cover are external managers for domestic equity, international equity, domestic and international fixed income, and agriculture funds. And the managers obviously manage the assets to a target return that the board gives them, and they're evaluated then on a regular basis to see if they're meeting the return targets. And there's different processes the board has if they're not, to put them on a watch list or whatnot, and eventually make a decision whether to terminate if they think they need to do that.
So no new, you can fire one and hire another or anything like that?
That's not related to this at all. They're in the last year, we have added two agriculture managers, and we did terminate one international manager, but it's not related to higher fees or whatnot. It's mostly just the growth in the assets.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the second request is a capital request of $500,000 for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. This is a mobility coalition grant funds from the U.S. Department of Transportation. These funds have been appropriated previously to the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. For some reason, they were appropriated to the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority this year. We're working with the USDOT to get them appropriated in the 06 budget to DOT. In the current fiscal year, we plan on RSAing the funds from the Trust Authority to DOT, and they will continue to manage the project.
No questions?
And Mr. Bartholomew will...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me for coming in a little late here, but, you know, on these increased manager's fees, I understand exactly what they are. I understand exactly why they're there. No issue with substance, but I got to tell you, the documentation we're provided basically just says, trust us. You know, this is the right number. In the future, it would be really helpful to me if, had a little more detail that sort of said why the number was 1,100,000. You know, kind of like what target were we after, what target did we achieve, and, you know, basically give me a little calculation. It would be really helpful in the future.
We'd be happy to do that through the chair.
Thank you. 15C
is $1.5 million increased manager's fees for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. And Bob Bartholomew is here to address that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Bartholomew, the Chief Operating Officer with the Permanent Fund Corporation. And I'll just follow up with two comments on top of what the Treasury Division has already provided, and that's when the 05 operating budget was starting to be prepared. That was about 12 to 18 months ago, and we prepare the estimates based on the biggest driver of manager fees is the stock market, and we base those projections on a median case assumption, which is about a 9% return on the stock market. And over the last 18 months, we've been averaging 20 to 25% annually, so it's been a pretty steep rise. The permanent fund at the time we started preparing them was $25 billion in size, and today it's $30 billion. And we can just provide the committee, we have a chart back to 97 that shows the size of the assets, the fees, and the tracking of those. And also I just would point out that when the bear market started in 2000, 3 years in a row we reduced our fees for the management component. And so we're still $6 million below where we were 4 years ago. We're asking for an increase in our 06 budget because we're already back ahead of that. But so we did reduce our budget over the last 4 years, and now as the market's turned around, we're going to see that fees go back up.
Any questions? Thank you. Susan, I think you have one more item.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I do. We do. It's section 20, and again, deals with increased manager's fees, although this is for the constitutional budget reserve subfund. And it's $25,000.
No questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, 16-3.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Joan Brown with the Office of Management and Budget. 16B is just a lapse date extension for a debt reimbursement proposal. When the FY05 budget was prepared, Metlakatla had planned to issue debt in FY04. The debt isn't issued until FY05, so we need to extend the lapse date so it can be reimbursed in 06.
Okay. I think that'll fly. Thank you. And last but certainly not least, transportation.
Good afternoon. My name is Nancy Slade. I'm Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Section 17A is a request for $930,000 in general funds to assist us in replacing Chandelier Maintenance Station on the Dolphin Highway. About 3 or 4 years ago, the facility was found to be deficient structurally and was vacated and demolished. We've been in the process of trying to replace that building. Since then, our staff has been working out of a tent and borrowed facilities wherever possible, and the equipment is located outside, as you know. The Chandelier is on the Dolphin Highway in an area that is the weather is quite extreme. We've received about $2.6 million to begin the work on the replacement of this facility. We've done some groundwork. We went out to bid for the building. The bids came in higher than we had available funding for. The $930,000 will help us in awarding that bid. That will allow us to go ahead and begin shell work on that facility. It will provide the basic shell of it, the doors, those types of things. It will not complete the facility. We have an amendment to our capital budget to complete the facility that would provide HVAC system and all of the equipment and the other things that are required to finish it. But this will allow us to go ahead and begin construction of that facility since we do have a short time frame for construction out in that area.
Yeah, Nancy, I might be ignorant, but do you have any more specifics on the project? How big a building is this, and what's the total? I don't have it here in front of me. What's the total dollar amount? So you have $2.6 million to start the project with, and the bids came back at $930,000 more, and we're building just the shell of the building. It concerns me that I haven't been up in that part of the state, so you'll have to forgive me, like I say, for ignorance that I don't know all the specifics, but it's just apparent to me that we're talking about a lot of money. When you talk about the shale and that we're going to need some more money for vac systems and for the interior, normally interior of buildings are the cost, if not more, than the actual structure itself. So I'm curious as to how much more we're going to put into a building and what kind of people, what kind of equipment we actually keep there in that facility to maintain those roads.
Mr. Chairman, the total construction cost is estimated right now at about $5.8 million. Our amendment to the capital budget is, I believe, about $2.4 million. I do have quite extensive information on specifications and all of those things that I would gladly share with you. It's about that thick. Most of the equipment located in this building is our highway equipment that's used to maintain the roadway, the Dalton from Adigan Pass, as well as mile 210 to mile 284 on the Dalton, and then also the Chandelier Airport. So it's all of the heavy equipment that needs to be protected and be worked on an ongoing basis. So that is why it's so large, is because of that large equipment that we're dealing with.
Well, I mean, the equipment's no larger than it is the equipment in Kenai or Anchorage. You may have more of it, but the equipment is no bigger.
Right. So. But also you're dealing with the location, which does add cost to it. And the other thing that we've been dealing with, of course, is the increased cost of steel that we hadn't anticipated that makes the whole construction that more expensive.
Well, I may want to sit down and talk with you sometime about it.
Certainly.
When you or I have time. Representative Holt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to kind of carry on that a little bit, to my understanding, Copefoot is used as a basis for most of that up and down the center portion of the highway there. And how close is Chandelier to Copefoot?
I don't know the mileage to the chair, Senator Holt, Representative Holt, sorry. But I know we have about, I was going to say, 4 or 5 actual maintenance stations that are along the Dalton Highway and their locations. I have a wonderful map that I would love to share with you that's got all those maintenance stations on it so that you can see the mileage.
Well, I appreciate it. I just know we have some extra money that we're going to be putting in for maintenance, or it's in the budget. But I'm just concerned that we have a Cadillac going in up there, and I think, like Representative Schnall was kind of intimating, that we don't know that we're, you know, this is just a garage. This is not like it's a fancy facility, so it seems kind of high to me as well. So.
The Chair, Representative Holm, yes, I don't believe that this is a Cadillac. Of course, it is for equipment coverage, but and for maintenance and ongoing responsibility, the work that needs to be done by those individuals. As I said, I do have all of the specifications for the facility, and I can share those with you so you can see exactly what it is that we're.
I would appreciate that,
sure.
Too. Thank you very much.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
The next section is 17B, and that is $3.4 million in federal receipt authority. We're requesting it is for a Department of Defense grant that we have received to assist us in help working on the infrastructure for the ADAC airport. Last year, we reached an agreement with the Navy on maintaining the ADAC airport. This will provide us funds to construct an airport rescue and firefighting building to replace runway dewatering pumps and to upgrade the airport lighting system for that airport. Um, 17C is emergency and non-routine maintenance. This is $573,400 in general funds. Last year we requested funding in the capital budget for FY05 to deal with emergency and non-routine maintenance areas. We were asked by the legislature to come back, instead of giving us the money, to come back and ask for it in the form of a supplemental. So that's what we are doing at this time. There are three items that we're requesting funding for. The first is $305,000 that is needed to deal with failing railroad crossings. We have a long-standing agreement with the railroad that maintenance of those crossings is a responsibility of the state. So we have repaired the Hurricane and South Denali crossings on the Park Highway, and we need to repair the University Avenue crossing this spring. And, of course, these are all because of their emergency in that they're failing and causing safety issues. The next item was
just a minute. We have a question.
Sure. Well, wait till she's, if it's all right, I'd prefer to wait till she's finished.
Okay, go ahead.
Next one was $50,000 to deal with ice storms and avalanches this winter. We've had major or severe and dangerous conditions on some of our major highways. That was the Parks, the Richardson, and the Alaska Highway. And so this is additional costs that we had accrued specifically to deal with those instances. It's in the area of requiring more overtime, equipment usage, additional blades, chain, salt, sand, all of those things that were required to deal with those particular issues. And the last item in that in this grouping is $218,400 for temporary repairs which are needed on the Johnson River Bridge, which is on the Alaska Highway near Delta, when an overhyped vehicle damaged the bridge, provided extensive damage to the bridge. And it cost us $218,400 in labor, equipment, and steel for that repair work. We are planning on doing permanent repair work to that bridge as a regular capital federal bridge project.
Okay, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The two big items in here: the failed railroad crossings and the bridge damage. Is there any third-party recovery of these costs, like contractor liability on failed crossing, or operator or recoveries from an operator for liability damage to the property?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, we do have a damage recovery program that we have in our administer, where we go out and we follow up on any of those types of accidents where individuals hit guardrails, light poles, whatever. We pursue that with the individual or with their insurance company. In this particular instance with the bridge, we were not able to locate the individual or the equipment that did cause the damage to the bridge.
Hit and run bridge destruction.
And we, you know, had the troopers, police involved in that investigation, and we're not able to find the individual or the company. And apparently, it was some type of piece of equipment that had an arm sticking out of it that went down the side of the bridge and did damage the cross members. So, and on the railroad crossings, I don't believe that is as a result of any specific instance or accident. I think that's just a matter of deferred maintenance on those areas and not being able to deal with them until they get to critical.
So those would not be a catastrophic failure or lack of proper construction.
That's it. I'm not aware of it, but I can certainly look into that.
You know, just it seems like as long as we are actively pursuing all remedies, we may have to recover damages wherever it's possible. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good point. It's been a
big piece of equipment that did that much damage to the bridge.
Right, and they were, and it was very strange not being able to find the individual who did that. So.
Okay, very good. See, no other questions. Continue on, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 17D and 17E, both of them deal with the Anchorage International Airport and are both related to increased utility costs associated with the airport. That they're experiencing, of course, increased electricity costs, natural gas, and fuel. Also, with the increase in sea concourse, the space there associated with it, we had budgeted for, or we thought we had budgeted adequately for it, but apparently not enough. So all of those issues together result in this increase. And these are funded from International Airport Revenue Funds, which is generated from the operations of the airport itself.
Let's go on to
Okay, 17F is a request for a reappropriation. Last year we received an appropriation for $10 million for the operation of the ADAC airport. Is for federal receipt authority under an agreement with the Department of Defense, U.S. Navy, for the operation of that, but also for maintenance items associated with the airport. We had requested that that appropriation be a capital budget appropriation, but it was given to us as operating. We're requesting that the remainder of that appropriation be made capital. And the reason for that is a couple of reasons. One is that because there is capital projects being expended from these funds, and also because it is the administrative somersaults or additional work that we have to do every year to close out those funds and bring them back in on in the operating budget the next year. So all of our basic projects are in the capital budget, and it makes sense for this, for consistency's sake, to have this also in the capital budget.
Okay, I've just had a question on one of your comments. You say that it's currently being used for capital improvements?
Without
the ability to reappropriate to you for capital versus operating?
Right, Mr. Chairman, it was appropriated to us in the operating budget. Mm-hmm. And so we've been using it as we had said that we would use it, and that's for operating and capital purposes both.
But you don't currently have the authority to use it in capital projects. That's why you're asking to have it reappropriated
to the capital side, operating. Yes.
Please go on, Nancy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 17G and 17H are both dealing with our regional facilities offices, our central and northern. We're requesting funding to deal with our heating fuel and utility and risk management costs in both of those regions. We've found that, as you were aware, the heating fuel has gone up an alarming amount. I just got my heating fuel bill the other day, and it was not very pleasant.
I did too, but I didn't have anybody else that I could talk in to pay my bill for me.
We're seeing the fuel prices have gone up between 24 and almost 40% in some areas of the state. The natural gas and electricity bills have gone up in their regions by 65%. We've also had increases in our risk management costs because of the addition of buildings, and that's mostly in the area of adding on snow removal equipment buildings and those types of things that are needed to be covered under the insurance and food risk management.
Okay.
Then, Mr. Chairman, 17 I, J, and K are all dealing with our highways and aviation components, northern region, central region, and southeast. Again, these are dealing with our increased fuel utilities and commodities increases. Not only are we seeing the increases in the fuel and utilities, but steel prices have gone up so much, and we're seeing that anywhere from 70 to 100% increase in steel. That's basically increased the cost for our culverts, our signs, our grader blades. We spend $1 million every year on grader blades alone. We've over 9,800 grader blades because they need to be replaced as we wear them out. We have to get new ones.
Well, I'm glad to see they're putting them on the ground.
Not high blade.
Not high blade.
Yes, we do use them. We had reduced our budget for Snow Hall in the Anchorage downtown area this year, and thought we brought it in line with what an average year would be, and it appears to have been a little low. So we also need additional $120,000 of that is for snow hauling activities in the Anchorage area.
How many state, Mr. Chairman? How many road miles or lane miles of state highways are in Anchorage? What state roads do you have? Glen Highway goes through Seward?
We, through the chair, Representative Holmes, there are several routes that go directly through Anchorage that are state roads, and I don't know how many miles are actually of state roads that are within the Anchorage area, but I can certainly give that for you. That's not a problem.
Well, I'm just curious. It seems like a lot of money for just snow removal and sanding, so I...
Right. Through the chair, Representative Holmes, and that's just a portion of it. The other thing is we have a contract with the municipality of Anchorage to maintain the traffic lights for the state on our roads in the downtown Anchorage area, which is over $1 million for that. So there is quite a bit of... we do have a lot of coordination with the municipality on these particular issues, and I can certainly, as I said, provide you the information on the number of road miles if you'd like that.
Thank you.
And on all the cities.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 17L is the $1,100,000 in Highway Working Capital Fund authority to pay for fuel bills for state vehicles. Our process is that we have a contract for fuel, for the provision of fuel for state vehicles. It's the credit cards that are issued as the user uses the credit cards. It's built to state equipment fleet then pays for it and gets reimbursement from the agencies and users. And so the money goes through the Highway Working Capital Fund. And this is due to the increase. Certainly the average price per gallon has gone up for the state from $1.55 to $1.81, so it's a healthy increase.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hawk.
If I might, sir. Here we have one half of the IA equation. You're looking for authority to receive the $1.1 million. Any idea why the other user agencies haven't asked us for $1.1 million to pay you?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, actually, back there when we were talking about highways and aviation, is that the fuel prices increases is shown in there in that increase. Because highways and aviation is probably somewhere between about 80% or more of the fleet, that's where you will see the increased cost.
Thank you.
And Nancy, I'd have a question. What type of credit card were you using?
We've changed, and I'm not sure which is the fuel company right now that we're, but it is a fuel credit card. But I don't, I thought it was the Alaska one, but I'll have to check on that for you.
And I'd just be curious as to why we might not use like a Visa.
We actually, bid this out and have a contract, and we actually get about 10 cents off the per gallon through this credit card grant.
By using a fuel company credit card versus a Visa or credit card.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was going to be my question. Boy, I was hoping it was a Visa credit card. Alaska Airlines credit card.
Oh, no.
That's what I was really hoping.
Mileage just for him.
A great little fun for traveling. 17M.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 17M is a... Let's make sure I've got the right one. $659,600 in general fund dollars to help us pay for our EPR, telecommunications increase. That's an enterprise productivity rate that's charged to us by the Department of Administration, Enterprise Technology Services. There has been a continual increase in the rate that is being charged out to telecommunications services. Last year we came forward with a supplemental at approximately the same level as this. It might have been a few thousand dollars more. The ETS has looked at the way that they've charged out to the agencies, and they changed their methodology a couple of years ago. We used to be charged by device count, which means for every computer, printer, peripheral that was attached to the computer is what you were charged. Now we're being charged by position count. And for DOT, that has hit us very hard because we have a lot of employees that do not have any type of telephone or computer or any of those types of things, because you have 800 people that work out on the vessels that don't have access to that. You have equipment operators that are on the field that drive heavy equipment. So to be charged based on employees has hit DOT harder than any of the other agencies.
Do you suspect this charge tax is going to continue to increase, and if you're going to continue to get these homes?
Mr. Chairman, I know that we're still probably going to need at least this level in future years, if not more. I can't predict, but I know that there's a lot of issues related to security and infrastructure maintenance that will require additional support.
No questions?
Yep.
No, Representative Kelly.
Back on the previous page, you had that transfer between operating and capital.
Can we do that?
Yes. That sounds strange. Can you tell me what that's operating money that's being transferred into a capital project?
To the chair, Representative Kelly, we had requested it as capital funds. It was a pot of $10 million. We actually got a $10 million check from the U.S. Navy, and to use for both ongoing maintenance of the ADAC airport as well as infrastructure upgrade to make sure that it is at the level that it needs to be for proper safe operation. So it's a combination. We asked for it in the capital budget because that's where we felt most of the expenditures were going to be located. It was given to us last year. It showed up in the operating budget. And so we're just trying to fix it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Let's move back to 17N.
17N, Mr. Chairman, is $68,000 for continued operation of the King Salmon air traffic control operations. You saw this in our fast track supplemental. We requested $44,000 for FY04 expenditures. This is the amount that's needed to cover the FY05 expenditures. Again, this was the FAA had decided to not continue the air traffic control services. We believe that it needed to be continued. The activity at that airport is so varied and seasonal that we believe that it's a safety issue required that we continue it. So this is the funding for that. We're in the process of continuing to negotiate, trying to have the FAA again look at the counts there to determine the amount of air traffic that's going in and out. Hopefully, maybe they reconsider their position, and also to work with the U.S. Army, or not the Air Force, excuse me, on possibly assisting with the cost of this operation.
Representative Kelly.
I'd be interested in seeing the, I mean, if the FAA pulls the pin, and they're the highest order agency we have for air safety, and then DOT determines that we've got to have people there for safety. And I realize that the fee, the $68,000, I assume that's including all costs, but it seems to me that there are a lot of airfields in the state that are extremely busy that do not have their ATC people there, and over time has steadily moved to fewer and fewer ATC people, even in airstrips with certified approaches. So I've been in and out of King Salmon. I know it's a busy place, but I'd like to see the count there compared to, say, Galena and a few other Bethel, other places, that just to get an idea of what it is. See, whatever you do, don't create anything special for me, but if you've got the counts, I'd like to see it if they determine that, that they're going to, in spite of the FAA pulling out, they're somehow going to have us do it for general funds. I think that I'd like to see the safety concern being determined is of a higher order than the FAA. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, we can certainly do that, and I can get have our Deputy Commissioner of Aviation, Kit Knudsen, talk to you about this particular issue as well.
Okay, thank you.
17L.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is $140,000 in non-general fund receipt and expenditure authority. Last year when we submitted our FY05 operating budget, we believed that we could implement an electronic timesheet program that could definitely save the department some money and reduce the personal services costs associated with the difficulties we have in just timesheet preparation and data entry. Basically, our system right now requires that you have an individual fill out the timesheet, they hand it to somebody, somebody's got to do the data entry into the ACPAY system, and somebody else has to do the data entry into the ACCESS system. So you have duplication of effort, you have potential for more errors, it's a very awkward system. So we've been in the process of trying to establish, to create electronic timesheet program that would automatically do some of those downloads into those systems. We've been working with Fish and Game on it. We are not yet been able to implement that system. We are hoping that it will be fully functional sometime in the fall. but in the meantime, we need we have not seen the savings that we had originally thought, so we need to have these non-general fund funds added back to our budget so that we can...
You said you're working with Fish and Game?
That's right. We're doing a cooperative effort, and they're, it's called the TIERS program, which is an electronic timesheet, and we've both identified that we have some similar needs in the way of project tracking, and it's been a very good working relationship in trying to get this timesheet program up and going.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wyra.
Doesn't the Department of Law have electronic timesheets now?
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, I know that they have a timekeeping system, but I do not believe that it actually provides that the download into the Act State payroll system, and that's what we're looking for. We're also looking for the some key for us to be able to track it to our capital projects, and which is through the state accounting system.
No other questions? We'll try to take lines 130 through 145, maybe in a fairly big chunk, because it is a fairly big chunk of money.
Thank you.
And if you want to, Nancy, go ahead. If you want to give us a quick rundown, and then if anybody has particular questions about any of these special funds expended on any of these particular projects, then we can go back and visit each one individually.
That's right, Mr. Chairman. For example, on the we have a couple of airport projects here that we're requesting. We find that working with FAA, they have a little more discretion in how they award their funds, and sometimes they don't always agree with what we've brought forward. So we think we're going to be phasing the project in, and they come along and say, we have more discretionary money. We want you to go ahead and expand these runway safety areas more. So they provide some additional funding. So we have to come forward to you to get the authority to receive those dollars. So it's a little bit different than how we deal with federal highways, but they've been very cooperative, very helpful in providing funding for our more needed areas, and they've found more funds for Hooper Bay and Bethel.
Bethel that big that we're going to have another parallel runway there? Or am I misinterpreting that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there's quite a bit of activity in Bethel.
Do you have any questions on any of these particular issues?
Through 145?
Through 145.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman, about 144.
Representative Stoltz.
That travel information signs, does that include tourist-oriented directional signs in that?
Excuse me, what was the question? Sorry.
On 144, statewide traveler information signs.
Yeah, does that include tourist-oriented directional signs?
Through the chair, I believe that these are the community service sign programs, and it's just on the NHS, and so it's identified as to, trying to make sure that all the signs that are on there are the legal signs. I don't believe that it's the tourist-oriented signs, but I believe I'm not sure of the differences between them and the community service sign program, but I thought that they were two different ones. I could be wrong.
Mr. Chairman, she says, these are making sure these are the legal signs. So is this providing money to take down signs like the guys that stick them up on the Sterling Highway and on the Parks Highway?
I believe this is more we've always try to notify the owners if they do have illegal signs. This is providing the new signs, is my understanding.
Not the new signs for illegal signs, I think, is not what you mean by that.
Yeah. So I can, if you want, Representative Stoltz, I can certainly have our design and engineering services group, who's responsible for the right-of-way program, who oversee the regulations on Todd signs and those types of things, to provide some more funding, some more information on that.
Anything to help them do their job better.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of 134, House Bill 134. With that, we'll stop for the day. We will bring this up at a future time, and I'll look for input on any particular items if any of the committee members may have any questions or problems here. We're currently working on putting together a supplemental, and we'll approach it as we get to it. We will go through each item and make a determination what's vital, what's not, and we'll move on from there. So with that, I think the committee members and the public, and we'll bring meetings across. Thank you.